From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As states around the country struggle financially to make ends meet during this coronavirus pandemic, school districts are among the hardest hit as the costs of distance learning have skyrocketed. Rather than increase federal funding for public schools, the Trump administration, under the leadership of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, is applying the shock doctrine in pushing a long-standing agenda of privatization and defunding in a moment of crisis. Writing about this is my guest, Jeff Bryant. He is a writing fellow and chief correspondent for Our Schools, a project of the Independent Media Institute. His article is entitled Financial Tsunami Heads Towards the Nation's Schools. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Thanks, Sonali, for having me on. Pleasure to be here.
So we should not at all be surprised, of course, that figures like Betsy DeVos are taking advantage of this moment of crisis. It is a longstanding pattern that we have seen. What precisely has Betsy DeVos moved to do during this crisis as schools are struggling? What has been her priority?
Well, what DeVos has done is she has made a lot of her funding that's available for schools to take advantage of contingent upon schools using those monies to push for online learning, which is something that is maybe perhaps useful during a crisis. But in the long run, what schools are going to have is budgets are springing leaks. They're going to have money to fill up those budget holes. And there's simply not enough money coming to schools to do that.
And this may be obvious to those who are in the education field, but for the rest of us, why are schools struggling with their budgets at this particular moment?
Well, there's significant current costs that are soaring. Like you mentioned, the cost for doing online learning. School districts have had to shell out millions and maybe even billions of dollars to buy distance learning equipment, things like devices to get onto the internet, and things like Wi-Fi hotspots. For students who are not able to get on the internet, buses have been outfitted as Wi-Fi stations, so they drive around and locate in parking lots and in neighborhoods to provide Wi-Fi service. Schools have also served as pantries for communities, primarily, of course, making sure students are fed during the day, breakfast and lunch, but also sometimes feeding whole communities and parents too, because frankly, the community services have all been pushed onto schools lately. So now schools have become our safety net.
So these institutions and school districts around the country have had to very rapidly change the way, of course, in which they do their work. And it's been a struggle for parents. It's been a struggle for teachers. It's been a struggle for students. Now, some of these districts are facing incredibly hard choices with having these massive funding shortfalls. Are they under threat of, or do they feel that they are essentially pushed towards layoffs and or other, you know, other aspects of budget cuts that could be devastating?
Yes. Let's turn the clock back a little bit to the Great Recession. What's happened then when there was significant economic problems that caused states to cut their budgets? What happened then was that schools were slashed. In some places, their spending was slashed as much as 15 to 20%. Over half of schools have not yet recovered from the slashing that they took during the Great Recession. More than half of states spend less on schools now than they did in 2008. And states' funding makes up about 40-some-odd percent of the funding for our schools. The other 40% or so comes from local taxes. Well, local taxes are now going to take a beating, too, because property taxes in some places may go down. The taxes for things like hotel rooms and restaurants, that's not going to be collected either. So schools are going to take an even bigger beating now than they did during the Great Recession, yet we're doing the same things now that we did back then. And it was it's a mistake. States are planning on cutting school budgets in order to balance their budgets. And also, we're looking to dump more of school responsibilities into the private sector. During the Great Recession, the Obama administration, in their recovery program, gave schools incentives, and school districts incentives, and states incentives if they steered more money to charter schools and if they lifted the cap on the number of charter schools. Well, now Betsy DeVos is doing much of the same thing, although her favorite target is not charter schools, it's voucher programs, which she calls micro grants, which basically just give money to parents to do whatever they want. And in many cases, they'll spend that money on private school tuition or private tutors or for highly suspicious online learning companies.
What sort of relief was included for schools in the stimulus bills that Congress has passed? One might imagine that schools should be a priority. Did they get any funding? And if so, what did it go toward?
The CARES Act, it gives money to states, but it doesn't let states allow any of that money to be used to do things like recover from state budget cuts or to balance what's going to happen when taxes come in and then are way below targets. Same with the education stabilization money that's come out. That's about $13.5 billion. That's for schools. But here again, schools are supposed to use that money not to do things like keep teacher salaries up or hire more teachers, but to spend that money on new connectivity capabilities like buying computers and what have you and putting up Wi-Fi spots. There is a coalition of education and civil rights groups that have asked for the federal government to come up with an additional $200 billion that they believe schools need in order just to stabilize their situation and not get hit too bad. That sounds like a lot of money, I know, but according to the Center on Policy and Budget Priority, there might be as much as $650 billion cut from state education budgets over the next three school years.
So how has Betsy DeVos managed to push her privatization agenda so far? Is it in the form of proposals or has it actually reached a point where it could become reality?
Well, the micro grants idea to give parents essentially school vouchers is the common term for it. Those are in her guidelines for how money should be spent. She would like to see a few million dollars proposed for that. She's also recently stated in the guidelines for releasing the emergency funds that private schools should be eligible for the money, and which, you know, seems like in many respects inappropriate because private schools don't get public school tax dollars to begin with. So it's
by
more
definition, they are private schools.
Yeah, they're private schools. So it's mostly in her broad interpretation of the guidelines for how the money should be spent is where she's making the mistakes.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the Obama administration, of course, had pursued its own privatization agenda. It seems as though school privatization is not uniquely a Republican phenomenon. It has tended to be bipartisan. And this push to have an over-reliance on technology, you know, in effect, seeing teachers undermined, you know, there's a certain kind of technocrat that imagines that an iPad is more valuable than an actual living, breathing teacher. This pandemic has been a fortuitous occurrence for those folks. And among them, in addition to Betsy DeVos, is New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo, who recently upset teachers when he said he wanted to begin a conversation with Bill Gates, of all people, to reimagine schools. Is Cuomo part of this privatization agenda? Is this part of his agenda, I should say?
Unfortunately, I have to answer that yes. As a Democrat who's had his crossings with the president, you would think he would be more oppositional to the DeVos and Trump agenda. But unfortunately, in some respects, he can compromise with it. And one way that he does is by, first of all, he has a history of being a strong supporter of charter schools. But now also in his collusion with Bill Gates, he's pitching an idea that he has, at least in his rhetoric, said should lead to not being reliant on school buildings. And, you know, if there are any lessons to be learned so far from this pandemic, one certainly is that online learning is something that most families are just not ready for.
Homeschooling. As a parent, I would have to completely agree.
Yeah, okay. So you know what I'm talking about. The other things that we've learned is that, first of all, as I said earlier, schools have become a safety net in our communities, either rightly or wrongly. And so that's made them a necessity for doing things like feeding children, having children be able to see a counselor or a nurse. And then third, you know, and this gets back to more of the fundamentals of learning. Another lesson from this pandemic is that the teachers and school student relationships are what really is at the heart of learning. Sure, you can put a kid online and they can do some exercises, but having a teacher present is what's so valuable. Students, especially younger students, we've seen miss their teachers, and teachers miss their students, and it's those relationships that are really the engines that drive learning, not as much as just the dispensation of content.
And it's not just that students need their teachers, they need one another too. For Governor Cuomo to say, why do we need school buildings? I mean, learning happens often best in group environments. I say this not as an education expert, but as a parent. And I'm sure many parents right now during these quarantine orders are seeing their children feel very lonely and deeply miss that personal contact with their fellow students. I mean, not to cast any aspersions on homeschooling, and you know, there's a whole conversation to be had on the issue of homeschooling. But at least for many children, having company with other children in a school environment is critically important. Why are folks like Cuomo interested in seeing, and DeVos interested in seeing, a transition to online learning? This is a question that we often don't stop to ask. But what is their real agenda? Do they just, you know, want public school kids in particular to just not have access to decent education?
Well, first of all, going back to your point that education and schools are absolutely an incredibly powerful socialization process. I know some people don't like to use that word, don't like the sound of it, but students are taught through their peers and through teachers to do things like be polite, to be empathetic, to help each other, to be cooperative. But on to your other point about intention, I think Betsy DeVos's intention are quite clear. She's been an ideologue for years about getting rid of public schools, really. I know she kind of soft pedals that now, but in her time in the Republican Party in Michigan, where she gave so much money to campaign contributions, her intention was always to create a private system, to create a system where businesses and even nonprofit organizations are responsible for educating kids rather than public schools. And she's also been very clear that public schools in her mind are a dead end. That's a direct quote. With somebody like Cuomo, it's a little more nuanced because I think he's more of a politician and not as much of an ideologue. And we all know that a very strong aspect of politics in modern times is big money. And certainly there's a lot of big money behind the move to privatize schools. One out of four charter schools in America has had startup funds from the Walton Family Foundation. That's the foundation connected to the Waltons of Walmart fame. Bill Gates has been a huge contributor to charter schools. And the charter school movement in New York State is very well funded and has given a lot of money to Andrew Cuomo. I think that there's a strong intention in Cuomo to be seen as a liberal on some policy ideas, but then at the same time undermine public schools because he knows that he'll get a lot of campaign cash for doing that.
What are teachers' unions and advocacy organizations for public education saying needs to happen in this moment?
Well, the American Federation of Teachers, which is the second largest national teachers' union, has come out with a blueprint. And they mentioned a number of things in that piece. First of all, the money aspect, which we've already talked about. The federal government needs to come up with at least $200 billion in emergency aid for public schools. And then there's also another issue that the American Federation of Teachers is pushing, which is very important, and that is an idea of what is called community schools. Since we have learned from this pandemic that schools have become the safety net in our communities, let's go ahead and embrace that and back this idea of community schools, which is that students would receive wraparound services depending on their community. Those wraparound services consist of something like dental checkups, certainly nutrition and health. But in other communities that maybe are not as in dire situation, it could be more of the mental health things, the extracurriculars. Also, another tenet of that community school model is that teachers are very much the centers of the school enterprise. Rather than having a top-down rule that the curriculum, the instructional practices be built from the ground up, using teachers that understand the local contexts. For instance, things might look a little different in South LA than they would look in the Bronx. We do have an opportunity here to reimagine, to use Cuomo's unfortunate terms, some things about school. But the things that we should put into place are some of these things that the teachers' unions are calling for, which are more education opportunities and education opportunities that are closer to the communities and more in line with their needs.
In terms of funding, are Democrats proposing any sort of funding for public schools that teachers' unions would find acceptable? Or are we going to see states basically being forced to raise taxes, which, you know, becomes yet another regressive tax burden on people who are already, you know, struggling, ordinary Americans already struggling deeply?
Well, let's be clear about the tax issue. That taxes need not necessarily be repressive. I mean, there is such a thing, you know, as a progressive tax code.
Sure.
And we've gone a long way from that.
Basically, making the rich pay more.
Yeah, right. And there are certainly ways to do excise taxes and other kinds of use taxes that are not as aimed as they are right now on low-income communities. There are excise taxes that could be assessed based on wealth. And also, we could do some things like get rid of some of these tax incentive funds that we see in being used in communities that spurred economic development for wealthy real estate folks at the expense of getting taxes from them that are needed for public schools and healthcare. So there's a lot we can do on the taxation level that's not regressive. But right now, you asked me, you know, how many people are actually doing that. Unfortunately, I'm not seeing a lot of positive news there. And that's why we need people like the teachers' unions and like these civil rights organizations out there advocating for what the needs of the community are right now, rather than just the needs of big business.
I'm wondering what parents of children in public schools are thinking or are hoping will happen. You know, just going back earlier to the real struggle that parents are facing with during this pandemic, dealing with kids at home, and maybe perhaps appreciating better than ever the value of teachers and real, you know, an actual school building, and being able to entrust their child to an educational expert?
Yeah, I was talking with some teachers the other day, and the idea came up that, you know, when 9/11 happened, The heroes that were lifted high back then were our firefighters and our police and our military. Well, we've got a different sort of situation now. You can't fight this disease with guns and with hardened security. And we see who are the heroes that are being lifted up right now, and it's our frontline healthcare workers, and it's our teachers. And I think that the reputation of teachers, which is historically high and is currently high, will soar even higher now. And I think we will see parents out there advocating for the things that their communities and their children need. We're already seeing that in this pushback to Andrew Cuomo's idea of reimagining school. There's a petition effort out there. There's a lot of strong community organizing around opposing his ideas. And if you recall the power of parents in New York State when things like standardized testing and the high stakes standards were being rolled out, it was immense. And I think that is being restored and could come to the fore again. And let's hope it does.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article on our website and where people can get a hold of it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. Take care.
Thank you. My guest has been Jeff Bryant. He's a writing fellow and chief correspondent for Our Schools, a project of the Independent Media Institute. He recently wrote the article, Financial Tsunami Heads Toward the Nation's Schools. We've been discussing how Betsy DeVos has been using the coronavirus to push her privatization agenda. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.